I'm Sonia Morton Firth and you're watching The Sonia Morton Firth Show. Today my guest is JP de Villiers. JP is a professional speaker, author of several books, a high impact coach and an elite vegan athlete. After a life-changing accident that nearly killed him, JP was forced to reinvent himself. This interview will give you insights into how to stay inspired even in the toughest times in mind, body and heart. JP, thank you so much for being a guest on my show. I'm so honoured to have you here and in my home as well.
Finally we've made it happen.
I know, finally we made this happen. JP, you've recently been through a life-changing experience that nearly killed you. Can you tell me a little bit about what happened and how it's really changed your life?
Well, 10 months ago, I was doing a cycling charity event going across the UK, the intention was to cycle 1,000 miles in 10 days. And on day 8, it came to an abrupt end. And I ended up in hospital because I was hit by an unfit to drive, hit and run driver. Let's just say that, left for dead on the side of the road and rescued by a helicopter, taken to trauma hospital and spent 2 weeks in intensive care and in and out of hospital for 2 months. Broke multiple bones. I've got metal rods in my legs going down from my hip and metal and screws in my arm. And I've got a scar up my stomach and I don't know what's actually, you know, I can
do real or not real. Anymore.
I don't know what's real and what's not. Sometimes I think about it and I just think, how did this happen? But
do you ever think, why did this happen?
Oh, all the time. And to, you know, this sounds like such a personal development-y thing to say, but this is the best thing that ever happened to me in my life. Not the easiest, not the most enjoyable, not the most awakening. I guess awakening, yes, but it's been the most difficult thing in my life that I've ever faced. But it's also been the best thing ever.
Why was it the most difficult? I guess just by the sounds of it sounds horrific. And you were also doing this for charity as well. Mm. You started this, as I understand it, to raise money.
Yeah, to raise money for cancer charity. The funny thing is, after my accident, the donations went up by like tenfold.
Yeah, so, which is fun, you know, which is great.
If anyone's looking to raise money for charity, just almost kill yourself. Well, it works.
That's a little piece of advice for people out there.
I'm all about strategy, and that's a strategy that works.
But it changed you.
I learned so many things about myself. It changed me in so many different ways. One thing that I love to share with people in a way that they can really understand is it changed me, and therefore the identity that I always was, the person that I always was, I wasn't able to live in that identity. So essentially, if you're not living who you are, who you think you are, who you know you are, then you're almost living a lie. You're not living to your true self. Now, it wasn't by choice. You know, I had done all the work on myself for many years. Like, one thing, I am a...
You're a high-performance coach.
I'm a high-performance coach, but I'm a master at being a student of how to be better, how to live in your truth, how to live according to your highest values, how to master your life a day at a time, have habits that, you know, make you your best, and everything to do with self-mastery. I've been practicing that for many years. But when your identity is a high-performance individual, an athlete, coach, speaker, and then you're left legless, so to speak, and you can't actually show up as who you have been your whole life, that is very difficult. And it taught me a lot about myself, and I learned a lot about myself not being able to be in the medicine of high performance. Does that make sense?
It makes sense if I just repeat that back. So you basically lost who you were before the accident. Mm. Can I ask you a question now? Mm. Was it the ego that you lost? Or was it the high... What did you lose?
Basically, everything you're doing in your life hopefully you are living a life that is in alignment with who you believe you are. So if you look at the early mornings, 4 to 5 a.m. get up, that was in alignment with being a high-performance person.
Yeah.
Training every day, non-negotiably. Getting on planes, trains, and traveling the world, speaking.
Fast life. Yeah.
Fast, intense. This is all I ever knew for many reasons. One, because I loved chasing the best of the best and becoming that. And seeking that out, but also because I had experienced the opposite of that growing up. And I was running away from that my whole life. But that's all I knew. So when you're not able to, when you're on crutches, when you're on morphine for months, when you're on blood thinners, when you're resting, when you've got broken legs, blah, 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 you can't be this person. So like, here's me. There's the person I've always been. And there's a gap. And that gap is... it's just a difficult place to live. And so not only did I learn a lot about myself and understanding about who am I and who do I believe I am and where am I now, and you know, being able to identify that gap and knowing, okay, these are the things that I love doing. These are where I get my rewards. This is what I love practicing in private. These are the things that I like doing in my spare time, and I'm not able to do all these things. By being observational and being able to look back at my usual identity or my usual life, I'm able to get very clear, or I have been able to get very clear on what I want to get back to, also what I don't want to get back to.
So let me ask you the question, first of all, what don't you want to get back
so,
to?
Remember I said before, it's the best thing that ever happened to me in my life. I spent all of my adult life chasing. I got goosebumps. As I said the word chasing, I just got goosebumps.
You know, I did as well, because I think I do the same thing, but go on.
And it's all I ever did. And it was a coping mechanism, and it was good for me. It served me for many, many, many years. But I kept chasing something that I didn't know I'd already gotten.
And you never got there, I guess.
And I never got there. You see... Because and all the stuff was created in hospital, or everything that I'm sharing now was created in hospital. In hospital, I realized that I had become so obsessive, so determined, so resilient, all these good things about a high performance person.
Yes.
And I was celebrated for these things everywhere. It was like being on a bullet train. And I'm on the bullet train, I'm in the VIP or first class section of the bullet train. And I've got all my workout, and I've got my social media, and I've got people looking at me from all over the world and celebrating me. And I'm happy with where I'm heading on the bullet train. But I'm going so fast, not only do I forget to look out the window and appreciate where I am, but I can't see. I can't even look out the window and see where I am because I'm going that fast. I wouldn't go as far as say I'm not actually living. I would say a year before my accident, up until the accident, I was having one of my best years. But I really needed to slow down. I had to slow down and even stop for me to truly understand on a heart level what I had achieved so far. You see, I promise you, Sonia, all I kept thinking was, I want to create an impact. I want to influence people. I want to heal people. I want to inspire the world, et cetera, et cetera.
Where did that come from? Your innate want to inspire and serve people?
That's a really good question, and I don't know. I think maybe it came from seeing suffering in my life growing up and being the funny guy.
And I know, and I want to bring this up, but because your father committed suicide when you were young, do you think that had anything to do with it?
Yeah. My father committed suicide when I was 13, but it was the eighth time that he tried. So my family lived with a lot of uncertainty, a lot of worry, a lot of fear. There was lots of fear.
Eight times.
Yeah, seven times he tried before. And the eighth time he was successful.
And how did that make you feel, or what meaning did you attach?
So I didn't know. I didn't know until the final time, but I was to understand more and more and more as I grew up. But for many reasons, there was a lot of fear. I also just found out recently that when my mother divorced my father, I thought the story was my mom divorced my father because he had cheated, and therefore she moved out with me and my two younger siblings.
Yes.
My two younger siblings and I. I was only to find out recently that no, when my mom confronted him about him cheating, he kicked us out of our own bloody house and got a flat down the road and said, move in. And us three boys and my mother moved into a flat while he kept his bloody house. Anyway, so there was a lot that went on in my life. And at 10, I almost went to foster care. My mom used to make chocolate sweets. And we used to go door to door selling these sweets so we could put cereal on the table for dinner. It wasn't like that the whole time, but there was a stage in my life when it was like that. And I don't know why, but I made myself the funny guy. I made myself the caring, loving guy. And I would come into the living room and make sounds and noises. And I just wanted people to feel good.
Yeah.
I've always found it difficult to see suffering in others and to not want to, or even make myself responsible for trying to change their state. And when I was 10 years old, when I almost went to foster care, I remember feeding a homeless man. And I was 10, and I just sat on the pavement on the side of the road. And I just experienced so much joy in that moment. And I had nothing to give other than my time and my energy and my heart. And I guess it just became my nature, wanting to do that. And at 23 years old, let me go back. I used sport as my first strategy, as my first coping mechanism to get through my childhood and what I believed was missing in my childhood. And I used that all the way till 19 to get through being a teenager and to get through high school and bullying and all that.
And you were bullied as well?
Oh, throughout school, because I was different. Because I had moved around so much, because we experienced what we experienced at home, I just started to withdraw from life. I was a shy, scared, timid little boy, and therefore I was an easy target. So I was just easy to pick on, right? I get it. If I was a bully, I would have picked on me, because I was just easy, an easy target. And I used sport as a way to get through life. And to get through.
And you excelled, and I know
I did great. I was a semi-pro cyclist. The only thing left for me was to earn a salary from cycling. I had sponsors, I had a team, all that stuff. I was going to ride the Tour de France. But at 19 years old, I found another strategy, which was clubbing and girls and partying. And it was a strategy that worked, once again. So I immersed myself in that, because I learned that regardless of what's going on around you, just immerse yourself in the thing that works for you. So now I did it again.
So you reinvented yourself again.
So I reinvented myself now from being an athlete to being a hedonist. And I realized that if I wanted to be a hedonist and be in the clubbing scene, there's no better place to be than in London.
Yeah, well.
So moved to London.
Was this the late 90s or?
Early 20s. Yeah, 2001, 2002. And moved to London, long story made very short, got into clubbing and became a DJ. And at 23 years old, I was a professional DJ once again, because I'd learned to just put yourself all the way in the deep end in what you love. And I ended up in Riga, Latvia, drunk, high, intoxicated. And on the next day, or the next morning, very, very, very alone. And it was 10 years since my father took his life, and I recognized patterns everywhere, like alarm bells. And I thought, oh my gosh, I'm heading in the same direction. And then I just said, no, this won't happen to me. So.
And is that at that point that you started your journey on your personal growth journey? You started researching?
It was at that exact moment that I realized, and there's a lot of things in life I'm not good at. What I am good at is being very aware. I ask myself very good questions, some really weird questions, but in that moment, I just had this moment of clarity, this moment of awareness. And I was 23 years old, never been to personal development, never had a mentor or coach, anything like that, any kind of positive, consistent guidance in my life. But I just knew, if I can come here on my own to the UK and do what I've done and end up where I've ended up. I must be able to figure out how to go the opposite direction. I just, all that I know has led me to where I've gone or where I am. So I need to figure out what don't I know. And I just got into personal development just for me. I had no intention of wanting to be a coach or speaker, you know, an influencer to others in a positive way. I just wanted to heal myself. Now, interesting, looking back at my life, looking back from now I can say that it was to heal myself. I wouldn't have said that for many years because I didn't know. I didn't know that I needed to be healed.
Were you healing the little boy that got, yes, the absolutely. Little boy that got
yeah.
hurt?
And the... coming here, I was just taking a moment to myself and thinking about our conversation and thinking all I do today is I learn and I share. And I would say, I would have said for many years, what I learn is peak performance. Because mm-hmm. that's much easier to say than I'm learning how to heal myself. Mm-hmm. But that's all I have done, is I've learned stuff that would make my life better, or that I believe would make my life better. And as I have found things that have worked for me, that I've put into practice and seen the results, I then go share them with people, clients, students, audiences, people reading my books, etc. But really, it's always been about healing myself. At 23 years old, I didn't know it then, but I just needed to heal myself. But what I told myself was I wanted to change my life. So then I built a career out of changing people's lives.
Yes, because and you were very successful at that.
Because it was the thing that I was most passionate about, that I was most interested in, because I was doing it for me. And, you know, there's a saying that the one thing you're trying to fix in your life, that one major thing that you're always trying to sort out, you know, build a business from that, because there's no one more passionate than you about that. So, yeah.
And so when the accident happened, this sounds like a bit of a hard question, but if you'd have died...
You can ask any question, by the way.
If you'd have died that day, would you have had any regrets?
So actually, I lay in hospital, and after I heard numerous versions of "you're very lucky to be alive" from doctors, consultants, nurses, because I actually got worse in intensive care, I started to ask myself some questions. And one of the questions was, if I had died that day, what would my regrets have been? And there's a few. But I pride myself on saying, live with no regrets. Right?
Yeah. It's
like my students
Your
and
mantra,
clients.
Right?
No, yeah. It's my mantra. And I thought, okay, if this is what I preach, thinking that my life would have gone on forever, right, just playing with that, if it had ended, what regrets would I have had? And number one was the whole bullet train thing, slowing down to spend more time with my family. See, I spend time with my family, but I could tell you very romantic stories about why I need to work when I'm around you. I was very good at that. And I'd go home to South Africa and I would say, hey, I'm on my phone while I'm with you, but, you know, I'm coming to visit you in South Africa, so don't complain.
So you're not 100% present.
I'm not 100% present. Mm. So one was to be more present. And following that, I saw my mom a few months later, went home to South Africa. And in 3 days of not being on my phone, my mother sat next to me and we shared a very emotional moment. And she said, she said, thank you. And I said, for what? And she said, this is the most time we've ever spent together. And it gets me every time. It was just...
Did you tell her you love her?
All the time. All the time. I'm in love with my mother. But it was just like, you know, awareness is the first step to change. It was just this massive slap of awareness in the face that, wow, it took you to almost be killed to realize how one little thing needed to shift for you to have a better relationship and better connection with your family. So then did the same, went and spent some time with my brother in Thailand and put my phone away for the first time in many years.
I think so many people could learn from that.
Yeah. And look, I would say, if you're around people, this is me for 10 years. Mm. If you're around people and they don't like you on their phone, you know, you've got to set up boundaries, you've got work to do, blah, 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 and I would justify this. And I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm not saying, you know, my way now is right. I'm just saying what I learned as a result. So that was the first thing. It was not slowing down and spending quality time, connection time with family. Yeah. And that goes way beyond blood. The second thing was waiting to go all in on those things that you truly adore, love, desire. Because you can be very busy being busy, and as a result, telling yourself stories of why you need to keep doing what you need to do and putting off what you want to do. So don't get me wrong, I live a great life. I love being a coach. I love being a speaker. I love, you know, doing what I do in so many areas of my life. But there's certain things that I knew I needed to do that actually were the things I wanted to do, like my third regret. So that was delaying, yes, yeah. Right? Not taking immediate action on the things that my heart most desires. And that brings me to my third regret, which is I have influenced and inspired in 16 countries. Right? I've spoken in 16 countries, some countries multiple times. I have a large, not a massive, but a large following on social media. And I do a lot of work coaching people in London and Europe. But the place that most matters to me and will always matter to me most is my home.
South Africa.
South Africa.
Tell me about that. What was it? What was it like growing up in South Africa?
All I've ever wanted to do in my whole life is remove from people what I experienced. Pain, suffering, hurt. And to give people healing. And I was doing it for all these other people. Not saying that that's wrong, but if it was to be my last year, you know, 37 years old, I should have been doing it there. That's what I want my legacy to be. My legacy is I want to be, I don't care. I really don't care whether I'm called the most successful coach, the highest paid coach, the, I don't know, whatever speaker. I don't give a shit about labels. If I cared about labels, I wouldn't have tattooed myself for everyone to see.
Is that now or before the accident?
For a few years now. But I want people to be very, very clear about what I stood for while I was here. Like that for me is what I want my legacy to be. I want everyone that knew me, whether knew my mind or my heart or my presence or my social media presence, I want them to know without any doubt that I stood for love. That's it. And more so, I want people in my home country to know that, because that's what we need. There's a lot of, you know, sour and miserable, depressing things said about South Africa, but I still have a lot of hope for my country. And I believe that we have the ability to unify and come together. And it has to be through love, loving others, loving each other, loving ourselves. So, yeah, so those are my regrets. Family, blood or beyond, blood and beyond. Not going all in on what my heart truly desires and adding it to my current successful life. And three, doing more work, leadership work in South Africa. And creating more inspirational leaders that act from a place of contribution and love and unity as opposed to consumption and greed.
So I'm so pleased you didn't die on that day and you're sitting here now with me.
Yeah, so am I.
How is it going forward? And you said it's really changed your life. Mm. And we haven't mentioned spirituality, but I can feel... And I know you've talked about your spirituality.
Yeah.
How has or where have you come along in terms of spirituality played a part in this?
It's interesting because as you said, what's going forward? Before you said, we haven't touched on spirituality, the first thing that came to my mind was heart mastery. So I've spoken about body mastery, physical mastery for a long time. I started my career.
You were a personal trainer.
That's how I started my career as a catalyst for change or a change agent. It was as a personal trainer. Then I realized that change lay in your psychology. So I became a life coach.
Mind.
And a peak performance coach. So then I went into mind mastery. But over the last few years, I've been once again, if you go back to when I was 23, it was first about me. And over the last 3 years, I've been focusing on my heart mastery. And in my recovery, I had lots of people say, wow, it's incredible. Your attitude towards this, you're healing so fast. Your progress is outstanding. And I believe, you know, having written down loads of notes in hospital and at home, whilst lying in bed, that it was because of my mind. It wasn't my body, but also it was my heart. It was really knowing why I wanted to recover and understanding who I wanted to do it for, how I wanted to go through my recovery, how I wanted to be seen by others, how I wanted to see myself in my recovery every time I look in the mirror. And it required me to do some deep spiritual work. So since my recovery, I've done things that I've been putting off for years.
Tell me about the things, because I know about a couple of them.
Vipassana meditation.
Now, this is a silent retreat. You don't have
10 days of doing nothing. No phone, no exercise allowed. Now, I've been in fitness my whole life.
Kill me.
So you get kicked out if you do exercise.
Even one press-up.
Because it's a distraction.
Yeah.
And, you know, right, so it shouldn't be allowed. But how funny is this, right? Based on the conversation we've just had, you'll understand this. I was always what? Too busy. I was always too busy. So I've been putting it off. I even had people book it in for me and then I cancel. Right? So I was always too busy to do nothing. That's
crazy. Yeah.
But this is why
coaching... Is it a guilt feeling?
No. This is why coaching is so powerful, because you can be a high performer, like a warrior. Look at me. I'm covered in tattoos. I'm a fighter. I'm a warrior. It's who I am. But when you're a warrior, you're in the arena fighting, and you can't see anything other than what you can see in front of you. So it took me to almost kill myself to be able to look at things from the pavilion of my life and to be able to look in and say, actually, JP, you need to do things differently.
You can't always fight.
Yeah. And also, you can't. And I don't want to say you can't always be in intensity. You can be, but I believe there's more beauty in life, in being able to slow down and still hustle, still be a high performer, still, you know, get loads done, but do it from a place of love, grace, and ease, as opposed to, oh yeah, on to the next thing and screaming and shouting. And hey, I was like an advocate of Tony Robbins, and I am still an advocate of Tony Robbins, but I represented Tony on all these stages. And you know, lots of things come into our life for a certain reason and sometimes a season. And for me, that season of that world is complete for me now, because I can't, for me to go where I need to go and want to go and how I want to serve, I need to bring myself back down to the ground, because if I'm too noisy and intense, I can't allow other people to be healed by me. I don't think, right? So I'm very grateful to that part of my life. But like I said, from my accident, I knew I needed to do some work on myself. I needed to slow down. I needed to stop the bullet train. And I needed to look at what are the things in my life that I was putting off, one of my regrets. So I booked some things in the diary that I'd always been putting off. I'd went on a 16-day silent meditation retreat where I not only did 6 days or 10 days, I went 16 days living in silence. Wow. I have known 10 years about plant medicines, and I kept putting it off for many reasons, one of them being fear. I know that plant medicines require you, or you know, these jungle retreats and ceremonial.
I'm looking into it now. Did you do ayahuasca?
Yes.
And oh, wow. I didn't know that about you.
Oh, I thought you knew.
No. Is it quite recent?
Yeah, very recent. But I know that...
That might be a whole new episode.
Another episode. And I will keep sharing that. And I'm just very careful about... know, I don't want to come out of the experience and be like, oh yeah, you should do this, you should do this. But you really should do this. Anyway, I did it, and I didn't do it for many years because I knew it required you to face yourself.
What did you learn?
The research that I didn't do, I knew that it was going to require me to maybe remember some things that I'd blocked out. And I've lived in fear of that for many years because I don't remember a lot of my childhood. I have some great memories. I have some normal memories, some challenging memories. But I have these pockets where I'm like, I don't really remember anything from that time in my life. So I was in fear. But once again, if I was to live with no regrets, would I want to do that? Absolutely, yes. So I did it just recently, and that was incredible. Your question was...
Can you talk about, or what did you learn about yourself, or what came up for you in the ceremony?
Sonia, this is really a whole nother conversation. So what I will say, it was... You can do 5-night retreats, 3-night retreats, 2-night, 1-night. I did 2 nights.
Okay.
And you are told that to come there with no expectation, just appreciation for being there and being ready for anything and everything. And Mother Ayahuasca or the grandmother, this plant medicine will give you what you need or what you can handle, right? Kind of like God. God only gives you what you can handle. And the first night, I experienced something that was just a beautiful moment of clarity in my life, like a very, very powerful moment that I needed right then, right there at that time in my life, on that day.
Can you talk about how it felt or what?
Freeing. The most freeing moment of my life. I just smiled, laughed out loud, cried. It was just like I was free. I was just free.
What did it look like?
I don't want to freak out some people watching this. So basically, ayahuasca is about reaching your third. You drink this root from the Amazon, and you drink it in a tea, and you meditate. And through meditation, which already gives you, if you're really good at meditating, you can reach your pineal gland, your third eye, right? Yeah. And see visions, and visions of your past, but also visions of your future, and get incredibly powerful insights for your life. And meditation does that, but this drinking this thing just takes it to all, it's like you don't have to try. Sure. Okay. You don't have to try. It's just poof, you're there.
Yeah.
So I went there, and I was in a round hut, a ceremonial hut in England, with lots of other people on New Year's Eve.
What a great date.
Yep.
New Year's.
2019 to 2020. And long story made very short, I just went into a beautiful, euphoric, present meditation. And then at one point I looked up and the whole ceiling just opened up. I just saw white light. I'm not religious, but it was God or Mother Ayahuasca. And just a voice said to me, the answer to everything in your life is joy.
Wow.
Now, you know, just... If you reframe it, it's more like grace, ease, slowing down, you know, having more fun. Everything that I'd been seeing, I was now seeing it and feeling it here. And it was just, it just was one line. The answer to everything, JP, is joy. And it was like, I couldn't argue it because it was like God speaking to me. There was no, oh, that's very interesting. It was like, as I heard it, I owned it, not by choice. It's just like I heard it and it just went into my DNA, into my body, into my cells. And it was like, and I just laughed, cried, had just a beautiful, beautiful experience. And because I've been a fighter my whole life and now realizing the answer to everything was joy, more joy, more joy, more joy, more joy, more love, I guess.
Yeah.
On the second night, because I was now ready to let go, the second night, I let go. And I let go of, you and I both know that you hold on to trauma, right?
Yeah.
You and I and a lot of people that we mingle with. And I just let go of 38 years of trauma. And it was very traumatizing. There was tears, there was shaking, there was fear, uncontrollable body shaking. of trauma that had just been trapped in different parts of my biology.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they say that the body,
biology. You almost got yes. What I said. And they say, yeah, the body holds on to trauma. And I just let it go. Now, the night before, I had this answer of joy and love. And when I finally let go, because it was very traumatizing, and my wife was on the other side, because females are with females, men are with men,
okay,
or males are with males. And she was worried. And eventually the healer came over to me, the actual shaman leading the thing. And she just reassured me. She just said, JB, this is just trauma. Just trust that you're in a safe space. You're being looked after and there's music playing and people come sit next to me. And I just said, okay, I'm just going to ride it out. Like, I'm ready to let go of this.
Yeah.
And for 3 hours, I just shook uncontrollably. I mean, I'm not talking like this. I'm talking like this,
yeah, like
under a duvet, just shaking. Oh, like just never. I mean, you honestly.
I mean, you hear people are sick or that.
Yeah, but listening to me, it sounds ridiculous. It sounds like I'm making it up. But hey, I was there, and I don't need to prove anything to anyone. Mm. And when I eventually had let go of everything that I believe has been holding me back from living my ultimate truth, I sat up and I just went like I'd never sighed like that in my whole life. And then there was a tribal ceremonial circle with everyone around. And in the middle was this mandala made of like sand and flowers and a candle in the middle. And something in me just said, go sit there. And I just got up, totally surrendered to God, the universe, to love. I had nothing left in me but just love and inner peace. And I sat down and I was like, right, well, that was incredible, incredibly hard. But I didn't get the answer because my intention for that, this is me thinking. I was thinking, yes. The intention for tonight's meditation was, why am I here?
Why are you here?
I was thinking, I don't know, I just let go of trauma. What's the answer? And I just thought, you know what? I'm just going to let go. And as I let go, I put my hands on my heart. I looked at the mandala and I looked at the flame. And I just was like, it's just love. I was like, I wasn't thinking that's why I'm here, but I just felt love. And then as I looked up, I looked at two other women sitting at the mandala, just smiling, like not smiling from here or here, like they were smiling from here.
Yeah,
and I was just like, everything is love. Everything is love. I looked at them. It was like love. I saw the mandala. I saw love. I saw the healer sitting. Now her son was sitting watching her smiling from his heart, and he was watching his mother, the healer, sit with his daughters, so her granddaughters, and she was kissing them. And it was just like, I just saw love everywhere. And as I realized, oh my God, that's why I'm here. I don't know what it looks like or how I'm going to be it, but I'm here for love. That's it. And
that's absolutely beautiful.
Because all I could see, it was like the only language I spoke and understood was love. I saw it in everything I was looking at. I saw in her, in him, in the babies, in the flowers, in the candle, in the people, in me. And then the person singing literally finished her one song and started playing the next song. And I'm not shitting you. The lyrics for the song was, I'm in love with love. And I just was like, you cannot make this up, seriously. And I just burst into tears. It was crazy. Crazy.
So with all of that, JP, where are you now? Where do you see yourself going in the short term and I guess the long term? I mean,
That's an easy question to answer. I've done body mastery for years, mind mastery. I still teach that. But there's now a third element to what I teach, which is mastering your heart. And truly, that's the highest level of living. You can do the mind thing and still have some stuff going on. You can do the body mastery thing and still have some stuff going on. If you really want to find out who you are, why you're here, what's holding you back, you've got to tap into your heart, into your truth, meditation, obviously gratitude, healing.
Higher self.
I don't... it's funny that I almost didn't say healing and I said gratitude and stuff. What the hell? Like, no, I'm here to heal people. I just don't know how to do it yet.
And do you need the answers yet?
No, I'll just do it in the way that I do know. So I said, I don't know how to heal. I do know how to heal. I don't know how to heal people to the full, to my full capacity. So I am still a student. Like I said before, my whole life has been about learning and sharing, learning and sharing. But what I learn now is very different to what I used to learn and what I used to study. I'll keep that as ammunition and collateral and evidence my whole life that this stuff works and what you can do in your life to heal yourself. But now I'm more in a heart mastery space. So I want to heal South Africa through influencing leaders to be more inspirational, more heart-led leaders. I want to heal my clients, whether that's one-to-one, and I want to heal my students all over the world.
And where can people find out about you? Where can they get more of this healing, this love, this joy, and this life mastery in all
so,
three areas?
Two things. One, if people just want to see my work and watch what I do, and I always say, don't watch my mouth, watch my feet. I'm waiting for an operation, but once I've had my operation, I'll just say, follow me on social media and just watch what I do. Watch how I live my life. And if that inspires you and you want to connect with someone like me because maybe you see a part of yourself in me or the way I live my life, not my identity or who I am as a person, then follow me on social media, Instagram or Facebook. My name, Jean-Pierre de Villiers.
And we'll put all that in the show notes
as
well.
And you know, if you're looking to work with me at some level, I have a thing called Best Life MBA, the MBA for living your best life. And the MBA stands for Mind, Body, Altruism, Mind, Body, Heart.
Oh,
and that's bestlifembA.com.
Beautiful. I can't believe we're at my final question. And this has gone really,
really fast. I honestly feel like
it's really
we've
fast.
Not even got into the conversation. So I might need to interview you.
Yeah, you might need to turn it around. So my final question, I ask this to all my guests is, if you were to write a message in a bottle to be found by future generations, what would that message be?
So I obviously knew that you were going to ask this question because it's your last question that you ask.
It is.
And it didn't take me long to think about the answer. And as simple as it's going to sound, it almost sounds like a throwaway answer. I'd be lying if I didn't say this. The message in the bottle for anyone 50 years from now, 100, 500 years, is that the answer is always love. It's always love. In your own healing, it's more love. In healing others, it's more unconditional love. To create more wealth and success in your business, it's more love. Like, put more love into your business, into how you do your business, who you do it for, who you do it with. The answer is always love. You want to get a family member of addiction, it's love.
Yeah.
You want someone to get out of their own way, it's love. You want to get out of your own way, it's always love. The answer is always love.
I love that. JP, thank you so much for being a guest
thank
on my show.
It's
been wonderful. Thank you. Hope you enjoyed the show. Remember, there's a new interview out every Monday, so hit subscribe and like, and you'll get it straight into your inbox.